Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you so much, Audrey. Thank you so much, Ms. Audrey England, in case folks don't know that. Welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Network and the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'll get my tongue untwisted in a moment. I'm your host, Keith Haley. I want to thank Johnny Cash again for taking us on that long trip. Mike, did we ever play Hank Snow's version of that, I've Been Everywhere, Man? We ever do that? Some night we should probably do that if we have any. Hank has a nice version also, but I prefer Johnny Cash. But anyway, he sings that from memory. How in the world does he do it? I don't know. Emily, Lucy, Mike, thank you all very much for being here. Also, we couldn't do it without this great staff: Audrey England, Mike Sorrento, Emily Springfield, and Lucy Spears. And Lucy is still not here. I get to do the blonde joke one more time. And Lucy, I think, is planning to be here next week. But she has very good reason for being gone from the radio station, but that'll be fine. She even volunteered to do it from remote, but I like everybody in the studio. It makes more sense that way. Purpose of this show is to discuss news, issues, and events in this field of criminal justice. Sometimes it's humorous, sometimes it's serious, sometimes it's both. I think we have a couple samples of that in our news stories tonight, but the criminal justice news just goes on and on. This show is dedicated to this energetic and tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and even in places around the wide world. You're listening to Blog Talk Radio. Every time I pop on there and I look and see who they're featuring and specializing, there's somebody new I haven't seen. So everybody's on there. The President of the United States has used Blog Talk Radio. I mean, on and on and on. So you have a chance to get your own show. We thank Alan Levy for all of this. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Blog Talk Radio and the genius behind the medium. Who knows how many thousands of individual shows are on there right now, and you, or your interest group, or your organization that you're a member of or that you lead, could sign up for a show in probably about 3 minutes and be broadcasting all over the world and streaming audio. Somebody woke up that heard from 1985 and heard this, they would think we were crazy. It's not. You can have a show just like that. These shows are archived immediately. You can get them on podcastdirectory.com. They're stored also, a certain number of them, on the Blog Talk Radio site. So it's your own show. That's what we're fond of saying. We're going to do something tonight which is very interesting, and I've talked about it before, and I apologize for last week. About once every 10 years, we have a technological glitch, and C-SPAN just did not deliver us the audio we needed last week. They kept shutting off, so we just went ahead and shut down the show. But we're going to try it again tonight. We're going to use a segment from PBS and Public Broadcasting System, and it's going to be the Frontline show, and it's going to be about Top Secret America, our intelligence gathering process in America. And if you stay with this to the second half of this particular segment, it's going to run about 50 minutes. The second half, you're going to hear things that you cannot believe that your tax money is paying for. It's absolutely astounding, and almost everybody I talk to that I get them to listen to this that won't read topsecretamerica.com, but it's about Dana Priest and Arkin, her compadre, and they studied our intelligence gathering process for two or three years. I forget which it is. And they found out things that are just incredible. And you're going to hear ex-CIA agents and managers and National Security Agency, that's our most secure of all agencies, talk about this process that even they say we have now overdone. We have now 17,000 different locations in the United States. Yes, I said 17,000 collecting intelligence information. And some of these, I don't negate the value of gathering intelligence and stopping terrorism on our soil, et cetera. But some of this is just absolutely absurd when you hear it. So stick with us. And, you know, it's going to be a video, so you're going to have to use your mind a little bit. I always say radio is better anyway. You can see the pictures better than television, right? Because they're created in your own mind. But anyway, you're listening on your computer, cell phone, whatever you're listening on. You can call in the show if you want to during our new segment. That's at 347-996-5983, 347-996-5983. But we want to move pretty quick to the Top Secret America segment, because I think you're really going to enjoy this. And boy, do I hope it works. Okay, we have a lawn joke for tonight, and I'm stuck with it. I am stuck with the lawn joke. Do you want to hear the lawn joke for tonight? I know you do. You wouldn't have any choice. Let me dig it out. Let me get the lawn joke out. Here is a really good blonde joke. Why are blonde jokes so simple? Duh, so men can understand them. Oh. Well, thank you. I thought you would like that. We even got a double round of applause. So that's a great. So men can understand them. Probably some women believe that, actually. All right, ladies and gentlemen, on a much more serious note, the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms has a public service announcement they want to broadcast to the criminals on the street. And we're going to broadcast that for them, as we've done every week for years, because we hope that when the criminals hear this message, they will sense the importance of it and take their firearms down to the local police station or the sheriff's department and turn them in.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition, and we certainly hope that there are people who abide by that message, because it's well worth turning in those guns. I have a green tip for tonight, and this green tip comes again from Esma Floyd's book, 1001 Little Ways to Save the Planet. And here's the green tip. I bet we have many violators in the audience across the land and perhaps across the world. Did you know that an astounding 30% of landfills in the United States, I said 30%, are devoted to black garbage bags? Oh, how would we prove it? But I'm going to take Esma's word for it. Set up your own reusing scheme for garbage bags by transferring your trash to a single outdoor receptacle. Remove and reuse the bags in the inside trash cans whenever you can. In other words, all that junk you dump in the inside trash bag, if you do that, take it out and dump it in one bag and bring those bags back. Ew. Oh, maybe not as bad as you think, but anyway, that's our green tip for tonight. And 30% of landfills are filled with black garbage bags. How in the world did they get that data? I mean, that would be something. When I guess they did samples to find out, they certainly didn't cancel all or look at all of those. All right. Here we go. Let's do some news, and then we'll get to our segment on Top Secret America. I do have a book I want to talk to you about, but you've probably been hearing that tomorrow's the sequestration day, where all budget cuts will be 2 point something across the board, across the United States. But, you know, who knows what kind of deal they'll be making at 1 o'clock tomorrow or 9 o'clock tomorrow morning or whatever. And you've heard all the views about it. It's good, it's bad, everything's going to stop. Well, you probably heard that immigration centers across the United States, in anticipation of the sequestration and their budget cuts, have been turning loose illegal immigrants who are scheduled for deportation proceedings. One of these guys was a 19-year-old who was pulled over. Some of these are felons, by the way. Don't get fooled by that, because the sheriff in Arizona has said that, not Arpaia. Another sheriff in Arizona said these guys have committed robberies and they're letting them out, and they consider this minor, non-threatening crimes. Really? I didn't know that. That robbery was that type of crime when you got a gun. But anyway, he was pulled over for failing to use a turn signal, and this is in rural Georgia. He was certain that deportation proceedings would follow soon, so he was mulling over when a guard brought up some news, and the guard said he was going to be released. He said, first I thought the guy was a joke or he had mistaken me for somebody else. But hundreds of undocumented immigrants from this jail were released in anticipation of these budget cuts that will take effect tomorrow morning or tonight at 12:01 a.m. The package of forced budget cuts known as sequestration will mean that $85 billion of government-wide cuts, and they won't occur all at once. But many people have said, including some legislature, by releasing criminals onto the streets, the administration is needlessly endangering Americans. Now, guess what we found out? Jay Carney, the White House press spokesman, said that the White House had no input on this plan to release illegal immigrants who have committed crimes all across the United States. But yet we had heard from the Washington that there was going to be something like this. So apparently somebody, it wasn't Janet Napolitano, we haven't heard from her, somebody decided to do this. Isn't that incredible? But we can't find the. I wonder if President Obama has ever studied administration and management, because he should realize that no matter what they do down on the bottom of his organizations all across the United States and the world, he's still responsible. He's responsible for it. I don't think he understands that. That's a basic principle of management. You delegate the authority, but you retain the responsibility for those actions. But anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what happened in that regard. They surveyed educators in the United States about guns in schools, and a lot of them don't want firearms in schools. 72.4% of educators said it would be unlikely to bring a firearm to school if they were allowed to do it. So teachers, I don't think, want to carry guns. I remember once a school resource officer up in Michigan, students were asking her if she carried a gun. And she actually got the gun out of her purse and laid it on a table and started talking about it. She'd gotten a little trouble for that, but I think she was also a fine police officer. But anyway, we don't want guns in schools. And Mayor Bloomberg in New York, of course, he's commented on that when he does have time to talk about something beyond 16-ounce sodas, that is, you know, ruining the population. I can't comment on this, but if you have time, go online and look at the story in the Hollywood Reporter magazine. It appeared on March 8, I guess, of last year, about Larry Flint. Larry Flint was somebody I knew from my old police experiences a long time ago, but here's the guy that pushed the envelope as far out as he could go. And he's now making something like $100 million a year. He's the founder of Hustler magazine and 100 other different type of porn type of sites. Of course, he was shot and paralyzed from the waist down. And then he had a famous court suit where he portrayed Jerry Falwell, the minister, the founder of Liberty University. He portrayed him in some terrible kind of picture. I won't even elaborate on it. You can imagine. And the case went all the way to Supreme Court. Supreme Court said that Flint had the right to do that. We couldn't cut that off. It was a cartoon where he had Jerry Falwell, exposed, whatever. I won't go over it, but just absolutely incredible. But Flint is paralyzed from the waist down, but he's 70 years old now. And he's still making millions of dollars a year, but he had bars in Dayton, Ohio, a couple ones, night spots that stayed open late legally because he supposedly didn't serve alcohol in one of them. But anyway, he's still around, and he made it by pushing the envelope. By the way, a Texas Republican said that President Obama's gun control campaign is fraud-based. Because he got Twitter accounts, apparently, from people stating their position on gun control and background checks and that kind of thing. And he found out that over half of them that he got all came from the same place. I wonder what that would be. But he said that 10 tweets use default graphics and names and have not engaged in any interaction with other people. Two of the tweets were sent at nearly the same time, and both followed just one person, Brad Schenck, Obama's former digital strategist. And Obama has a digital strategist or two. Strategist or two in his outfit because he knows how to use the social media. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens. I'll finish up with this one. These firearms companies in the United States are really worried about gun control. You know, restrictions and slowing down the sale of guns and the amount of guns that can be sold and on and on and on and on. So guess what? They are now, we have 34 firearms manufacturing companies in the United States that are not going to sell firearms to government agencies, including police departments and sheriff's departments, in communities that, in fact, and states and counties that have these super strict, restrictive firearms laws. So that's going to be interesting. Where is the government going to get its guns if all of a sudden we get a substantial portion of the manufacturers not going to do that? But I don't think that's going to happen. Mike and I talked about that because they make a lot of money selling guns to police departments because guns have to be renewed. They have to be, on and on and on. So that's probably not going to happen. Okay, what we're going to do now then, I wanted to tell you about a book. Yeah, this book called World Walk by Stephen Newman. I just started reading it. And Stephen Newman walked around the entire world. He started in southern Ohio, in Bethel, Ohio, and started east and walked all the way to Washington, D.C., Boston, over to Ireland, around the world. And it took him 4.5 years to do this. And what was amazing, in his first 3 or 4 days, he only went three, 40 miles or something like that. His pack was like 2 or 3 times heavy as it should have been. But what you see in this book is the kindness that people showed him, seeing him going down the road in the rain and all that type of people and the people that brought him in and gave him food and gave him a place to sleep and on and on and on. So it's a very interesting book. It's by Stephen Newman. It's called World Walk. And Stephen Newman was a Ohio University graduate and a journalist. And then he went out and took a job, I think, out in Wyoming, then came back and decided to do this this World Walk. So I'll keep you posted on that particular thing if you're interested at all. But it's an incredible thing. Well, give me time to sit up here for Dana Priest and the PBS show Frontline as they talk about Top Secret America. Hold on a second. PBS always plays a little ad, so give me a few seconds here.
If it wasn't for a little thing called the
within seconds.
Tonight on Frontline.
After 9/11, the gloves come off.
10 years after September 11th.
What happens after 9/11 is this tremendous ramping up.
The money just came out of Congress. It was flying out.
Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Dana Priest investigates the creation of Top Secret America.
It's shrouded in secrecy.
We weren't going to play by the old set of rules. Go out and get the bad guys. Disrupt them. Interrogate them. Kill them. Tonight on Frontline, Top Secret America.
Good morning, America. I'm Charles Gibson.
I'm Diane Sawyer. It's Tuesday, September 11, 2001.
Just a few moments ago, something, believed to be a plane, crashed into the South Tower of the World Trade Center.
Crashed into one of the towers.
It's almost like a mushroom cloud.
Figure out exactly what happened, but clearly something relatively devastating.
Welcome back to Fox. We have a very tragic
news for you. There's something in the Pentagon on the outside of the fifth floor on a day unlike any other in a long course of American history, a terrorist act of war against this country.
Make no mistake. The United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for these cowardly acts.
President Bush said to us in the basement of the White House on the night of 9/11, you have everything you need. And that was true, because as soon as we went to the Congress, they said, just tell us what you need. Blank check.
The president was determined to spend whatever was necessary and do whatever was necessary to conduct a new kind of war.
The president turned to me and said, in my direction anyhow, he said, never let this happen again.
I understood that to mean there was no end of the earth we weren't willing to go to. There was nothing we weren't willing to ask for. There was nobody we wouldn't work with.
The key to the new war would be secrecy. We'd have to work the dark side, if you will. We'd have to spend time in the shadows and in the intelligence world.
On the first few days, the entire blueprint for what would happen over the next decade was written, all in secret. The public didn't know, the media didn't know, and it would take us years to find out.
For 10 years, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Dana Priest has reported on hidden military and intelligence operations.
A lot of what needs to be done here will have to be done quietly without any discussion, using sources and methods that are available.
In the beginning, we saw a little bit of this world everywhere, and we were gathering bit by bit.
It's going to be vital for us to use any means at our disposal to achieve our trip.
Really took years to figure out how big it really was, and we were shocked.
For Priest, one of the first hints of the secret war. Was revealed at this congressional hearing. When I speak, I think the American people need to look into my face. And I want to look the American people in the eye. My name is Kofor Black. Kofor Black was in charge of the CIA's counterterrorism efforts.
This is a very highly classified area. All you need to know is that there was a before 9/11 and there was an after 9/11. After 9/11, the gloves come off.
Beyond that, Black refused to divulge any details.
We just wanted no information out. I think the reality is that they wanted to keep it secret because they were doing things that a lot of people would not approve of. And they wanted to do them as long as they could without being found out.
The plan for the secret war began here at the Central Intelligence Agency in the hours right after 9/11. The reaction in our building and among our leadership was pretty simple. Anger and resolve. We were fighting these guys, and they won a huge victory on that day. And it was a huge defeat for us. This one. This has finally got past all of our defenses. We had plans that had been, you know, developed in the past that had reached their due date with 9/11.
He was very aggressive. He saw no boundaries to what he could do. At one point, he talked about bringing Bin Laden's head on a platter with flies on the eyeballs.
When 9/11 happened, it was Kofor who really took the lead in being the most vocal person saying, okay, this is a tragedy, but the gloves are off. We're going to go out and we're going to defeat Al-Qaeda. We're going to kill Bin Laden. And we're going to win this war. That night, they prepared an operational plan. Kofor and his people pulled together what were going to be the next steps as far as going after Al-Qaeda, going after Afghanistan. They were the ones that actually were able to bring the plans to the table first and present them at the White House. Where everybody else is looking for their maps on Afghanistan, we're ready to rock, ready to roll. I mean, we were waiting for the bureaucracy to catch up. Black would personally present the plan to President Bush. CIA had already done more homework on Al-Qaeda than any other part of the U.S. government. And so what they were able to do then was to put together a proposal and a timeline as far as how the CIA could be the vanguard of the U.S. government move against Al-Qaeda. The CIA codename for the covert program would become Greystone.
They had a matrix that they offered to the White House that said, these are the countries we need to go into. Go after Bin Laden and his terrorist network. Kill and capture them and their supporters.
Greystone was a challenge to the old ways of fighting, and the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, knew it.
So the CIA was very much in front of the military, and that bothered Rumsfeld greatly.
But Rumsfeld's generals had no plans for dealing with Al-Qaeda or Afghanistan.
We had no plan. I mean, to be honest, you have operational plans for different parts of the world. There was none for Afghanistan.
Rumsfeld scrambled, but Gopher Black was way ahead of him. In less than a week, the president initiated Greystone. All assemble in the cabinet room, and the president lays down about 12 decisions, just like that, machine gun fashion.
What did he say?
Well, of course, the thing that stands out in my memory, because it hit me vividly, was he said, "I want CIA in there first." That day, President Bush signed a key document, a finding, authorizing Gopher Black and the CIA to wage a covert international war. It was a very comprehensive finding. It was generally worded. It was go out and get the bad guys, disrupt them, kill them, interrogate them. This was an overarching authorization of the CIA. I had never...
seen a presidential authorization as far-reaching and as aggressive in scope. It was simply extraordinary.
In a post-9/11 world, we weren't going to be so prissy. We were going to work with and do what we needed to do. No matter how difficult or undesirable it was, we were going to do what we needed to do to get the information we needed to protect the American people.
The finding would set the ground rules for the new war on Al-Qaeda.
That sets in motion the largest covert action program since the height of the Cold War, and many people inside the agency will say it's even larger than that.
Now, basically in a nanosecond, we're going from where we were staked to the ground like a junkyard dog. You can report, but you can't do anything. Two. New authorities, new rules of engagement, lots of funding to support this. This is a whole new ballgame. Within 2 weeks in Afghanistan, the first phase of Greystone began. My team of or seven officers, including myself and three air crew, flew in on the 26th of September. When I began to distribute money, $200,000 here, $250,000 for this, I think the Afghans were convinced that we were sincere. The action was planned to be classic. The CIA was going to be a multi-pronged threat attack where we worked with locals, minimize. American footprint. CIA officers, of course, in Afghanistan for the first time since World War II are involved in battlefields and combat operations, doing things that we hadn't done in 60 years. So I think it's kind of a shock to the military.
The CIA went in right off the bat. Hooked up with the Northern Alliance, and it was really quite remarkable what they accomplished with so few people on the ground.
didn't take long for the Taliban to fall. The CIA had demonstrated it could fight effectively in the shadows.
We'd like the survivors of 9/11 to know that those of us in the business consider it the CIA's finest hour. We went in to kick ass, and we did.
If it wasn't for a little thing called a computer, we might still be making mixtapes. Find this, pause this, play this, eject this, write this. It's like the days before Esurance ExpressLane. You had to find a bunch of documents just to get a car insurance quote. Now, ExpressLane finds your driving info with just one click. Saving time. To be nostalgic about the days before ExpressLane. Thank you, insurance for the modern world. Esurance. Now back by all things. Click or call.
There have been dramatic developments on the ground in the war in Afghanistan. The
Taliban suffered a series of defeats as North Alliance.
Washington publicly celebrated the first victory in what they began to call the War on Terror.
There were celebrations in Afghanistan's capital today as followed a series of stunning successes.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
Terrorists who once occupied Afghanistan now occupy cells at Guantanamo Bay. And this evening, we welcomed the distinguished interim leader of liberated Afghanistan, Chairman Hamid Karzai.
Victory in Afghanistan came so quickly, and the ball kept rolling in secret. And by and large, it continued in secret.
Greystone was underway well beyond the borders of Afghanistan. In more than a dozen countries, operatives were fighting a global secret war.
George Tenet calls me one morning and said, we've got our target. I said, okay, we're good. I'm going down to the UAV room.
The unmanned aerial vehicle room was in Tampa, Florida. A drone. It was flying over Yemen. The target was in an SUV.
Got a vehicle moving out.
Are the vehicles moving right now?
I'm sitting back like this, looking at the wall and talking to George Tenet. And he goes, you going to make the call? And I said, I'll make the call. He says, this SUV over here is the one that has Ali in it. I said, okay, fine. You know, shoot. They lined it up and shot it.
Go right in. Oh, hey.
It's a pretty good size explosive in an SUV. You can imagine a big explosion. So we knew everybody in the vehicle was dead.
An attack in Yemen killed a top Al-Qaeda leader.
The CIA fired an armed predator at a car driving in the desert in Yemen with a weapon that we didn't know they had in a way that we had never seen anybody do anything like this before.
It's just war. It's no different than going to the store to buy some eggs. It's something you got to do. These are the same people that had just killed over 3,000 people in the Twin Towers and killed over almost 200 people in the Pentagon. This was easy.
It just begs so many questions. Is this assassination? You know, what rules are they operating under?
Still, it raises up.
I'm going to move this forward a bit so you can hear as much as you can on a public broadcasting network, which has slow equipment, so we can talk about the intelligence gathering process in the United States. This segment's called The Secret War at Home, if we can get it.
The scenes of free Iraqis celebrating the streets, riding American tanks, tearing down the statues of Saddam Hussein in the center of Baghdad are breathtaking.
If it wasn't for a little thing called a computer, we might still be making mixtapes. Find this, pause this, play this, eject this, write this. It's like the days before Esurance ExpressLane. You had to find a bunch of documents to get a car insurance quote. Now, ExpressLane finds your driving info with just one click. Saving time. To be nostalgic about the days before ExpressLane. Thank you, insurance of the modern world. Esurance. Now back by Allstate. Click or call.
September the 11th, 2001, our freedom and way of life came under attack by brutal enemies who killed nearly 3,000 innocent Americans.
On the night of 9/11, the CIA had planned a secret war abroad.
Since September the 11th, we've been on the offensive against the terrorists plotting within our borders.
At home, another front had been opened. The battle to protect the American homeland.
We had to move from proving what happened to preventing something from happening because the costs that came with a mass destruction event like 9/11, we can't allow that.
The president asked the nation's largest and most secret intelligence agency to step forward.
A couple weeks into the war, we were asked, is there anything more we can do to defend the homeland?
At that time, Michael Hayden ran the National Security Agency, the NSA.
We had a conversation with the vice president and then with the president saying that here are some additional things we could do, but we cannot do them because we do not currently have authorities to do them. That was the basis of the evolution of what became the terrorist surveillance program.
The terrorist surveillance program authorized the NSA to intercept certain telephone calls and emails of American citizens without a warrant.
It clearly was atypical when it came to where the traditional boundaries of the National Security Agency had been, when it came to communications, one end of which was in the United States. That was a change.
Nobody was in a mood to say, well, wait a minute, are you infringing on privacy? You know, privacy versus another 9/11 attack. There was no real question about what was going to win over that.
From inside their secure Maryland headquarters, the NSA was now focused on trying to prevent the next terrorist attack.
I began to lay out to the people of NSA what our mission had become. And it was clear it was going to be counterterrorism. I said we would be shifting over to the offense and that we would be an integral part of that offensive move.
The NSA created a global electronic dragnet capable of reaching it. To a America's communication networks, capturing 1.7 billion intercepts every day.
The National Security Agency has a huge vacuum cleaner around the world, and it is sucking down information from computer networks, from radios, from telephone calls, all over the world. So much information that no human being could ever go through it on a daily basis. Another basic challenge is in sorting through the huge volume of information. The analogy is not so much a needle in a haystack, it's a needle in a stack of needles.
But finding the exact needle would take manpower, lots of it, and in a hurry. The NSA turned to a new force in the
Listen to what they did. Very interesting.
Covert war, private contractors.
You had this boom in the corporate intelligence world as well. Companies like CACI, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, just all the old-fashioned industrial, we're building ships and submarines type corporations quickly moved into the intelligence and information space.
The NSA spent billions of dollars on more than 480 private companies. Michael Hayden led the effort in the days right after 9/11.
I did it at NSA, George did it at CIA, we all did it. It was a way to go out there and to get these capabilities into the flow instantly more quickly than you would have been able to do had you gone through the government personnel system.
In office parks near the NSA, thousands of private contractors. Many making much more money than federal employees, helped adjust data.
This war was not a war that required a lot of tanks, a lot of fighter jets. It required information, and information flows in a different way and is analyzed by machines.
Exactly how much money the NSA was spending in the years after 9/11 is one of the government's most closely guarded secrets. The agency's budget, like its work, is a state secret.
Well, have you actually looked at this building on a satellite map yet?
No,
it's gigantic. I mean, it's
in Vermont, a reporter and former defense analyst, William Harkin, spent years trying to track the post-9/11 growth of America's hidden intelligence world.
It's a government organization. It shows up nowhere. It's in a pizza parlor. It looks like it's a cover address. There's no defense organization there. I'll have to go look at it, or you'll have to go look at it.
Okay.
Working with Dana Priest, the two would do what no one else had done. Identify one by one the buildings and companies in what they called Top Secret America.
Defense policy analysis, defense program support, asymmetric warfare group, Project 7 special security, CIA and FBI and NSA and all the other agencies.
It took me about a year to complete a decent catalog of the government entities and corporate entities that work in this world.
They discovered they were the only people in the country collecting such detailed information. The only way they could verify any of it was to go there in person. Hundreds of secret locations hiding in plain sight in office parks.
This is the gate to the NSA.
Yeah, there's a government facility back in there. You'll see it better if you turn down this road.
Inside buildings like these, They launched drone strikes. Gather and spread secret information. Engage in cyber conflict.
Got Titan in here. CSC is in one of his buildings. General Dynamics.
So you really have the big mega firms, the giants of this whole industry here. Grumman. Boeing.
With a security station here in the front where they check out the cars and look underneath.
Yeah, so maybe you should put the camera down.
You just never know who's watching over here.
All right, so can we just go over your house?
Sure. At the Washington Post, Priest and her team compiled what they found.
This is the picture that I went up to that public parking lot. It was totally legal to be there.
For the rest of my life? I will never see the world the same way again, especially around Washington.
So had it not been for the leaves off the trees and at night, you would never see this thing.
Well, yeah, it's gigantic.
Yeah.
These buildings that, they might only be four stories high, but they go down 10 stories. And there's a whole world down there, like shops and places to eat that you don't know about. That's just for them.
They had uncovered a new secret world that had grown up in the years after 9/11.
To put the dots on the map, you had an alternative geography of the United States, a secret geography that is so important that guides how this country keeps itself safe, and yet it is not revealed to the public, even though it may be next year back door.
They didn't put it in one place. If they had, it would have been the size of the District of Columbia. What they did instead was scatter it around so it fits into the fabric of metropolitan Washington and on up into Baltimore, and it looks like commercial office space. Huge new bureaucracy that you can't really see.
War fierce fighting between U.S. forces and the Shiite militia.
In Iraq, by 2004, the war was going badly.
It's one of several places where there was violence in Iraq over the weekend. Number of American troops killed.
This is probably a good place to shut it off. And again, I apologize. We will no longer play on the Jumbo Justice Radio Show any tapes from or any recordings from government websites or video because they don't play steadily. I've tried this on all other computers and that type of business. It's the same kind of thing. But I hope this has initiated an interest to go to the PBS video site and the Frontline show and look at Top Secret America. It's to divide it up into several chapters. The first half is the war on terror at overseas, abroad. And then the second half is about at home. And you'll just see, just as you probably heard in the last 5 or 6, 8 minutes, things that you can't even imagine that you and I are paying for. I'm not saying there isn't some good done for this, but what's that line? It's America, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. And I think we have overdone it. When we have hundreds of thousands of reports a year, people are saying that are never read by anybody, something is wrong somewhere. These people go to work, they do this stuff, they go home, back and forth, and that's it. But how about those buildings in the D.C. area where, you know, they're 2 stories high but 10 stories below the surface, and they're secret places, and private contractors collecting this information are private. I'm just asking the question, are private contractors involved in drone killings? They must be involved in providing the intelligence for it, but I hope for some reason they're not pulling the trigger in these cases. So anyway, very interesting thing. And what we don't know means we're ignorant in some areas, but this is a very instructional piece of work, and Dana Priest and Arkin, she won the Pulitzer Prize for this. So it's a fine piece of journalism. You can also go to topsecretamerica.com or go to the Washington Post and look for topsecretamerica.com and get much of her work there. So that's it for this evening. So I think what we'll do is we'll have Vera Lynn sign us off singing what she always sings. We'll meet again.
Again, don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do. Till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know. Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know where.